Hi, my name's Andrea Peterson. I'm a nurse practitioner in psychiatry. I work out of the Empath and emergency psych area in St. Cloud, as well as helping regionals with emergency psych assessments. Today, I'm just going to give a little presentation on psychotropics during pregnancy and lactation. During the presentation and afterwards, I'd like you to kind of understand the potential risk associated with antidepressants during pregnancy and lactation, explain potential risk of untreated depression to the mother and fetus during pregnancy and postpartum period. I do not have any disclosures. There may be discussion of off-label use, FDA off-label use of medications, which is kind of somewhat common in psychiatry. So, while we're going through this presentation, I just want you to kind of think of this case study and what would you do? How would you pull the information we talked about and apply it to it? And we'll discuss at the end. You have a 25-year-old female comes to your clinic. She has no history of pregnancies. She has a history of major depressive disorder, recurrent, and generalized anxiety disorder. She is married, has a supportive apartment. She came into your clinic today. She wants to discuss whether antidepressant use during pregnancy is safe or whether she should discontinue her medications. During the appointment, it's very important to clarify the diagnosis. So, does this person really have a major depressive disorder, recurrent? Is there any mania or bipolar disorder? Was the symptom substance induced? Was she drinking alcohol at the time? Was it an adjustment disorder where she had a breakup with a boyfriend that lasted about a month and she returned to normal self? You clarified she does have a major depressive episodes. The episodes sound like she's had severe impairment. She has a history of a suicide attempt, of overdose. As a teenager, it was a non-lethal attempt, but she did not seek care. During her episode, she'll have impairment in work, difficulty with concentration, hypersomnia, not attending to ADLs such as showering. She's had suicide ideations. She has attempted multiple times to self-taper off medications with relapse of severe episodes of depression. History of ER visits, but no hospitalizations. Previous trial of fluoxetine 60 milligrams without benefit. Currently, she's on escitalopram 10 milligrams. Feels like it's overall beneficial. She still has some symptoms, lingering of depression, some hypersomnia, decreased interest, but not severely impairing her function. So, you want to be aware during your appointments. Anyone of potential pregnancy, 50% of pregnancy are unplanned, so you want to plan for the future. 80% of those with mental illness have unplanned pregnancies. So, when starting a medication with a woman of reproductive age, have the discussion about their family planning. If they're not planning to get pregnant or wanting to get pregnant, how are they preventing it? And it's okay to have frank discussions. Like, if they're not doing anything to prevent it, then they are planning on getting pregnant. If the patient already presents pregnant, don't panic. Don't automatically taper them off their psychotropics. And generally, there's very few psychotropics that we have to taper someone off immediately. One of those is Depakote, which Depakote in Europe, you can't even prescribe someone of reproductive age, a woman of reproductive age, due to the risk of intellectual impairment as well as neural tube defects. If looking to adjust medications on which patients are stable on, would recommend adjusting them prior to the pregnancy. You don't want to destabilize their mental health during pregnancy. You also want to carefully consider the woman's diagnosis, her illness, Did she have severe episodes? Did she try multiple other treatments and this was the only medication that worked? Did their episodes lead her to hospitalization, suicide attempts? And you want to consider the risk of untreated mental illness that poses the fetus and as well as the mother versus the risk that the medication poses. The goal remains for the mother to be psychiatrically stable during pregnancy and during the postpartum period. This is better for the baby, this is better for the mother and the full family environment. Make sure your diagnosis is correct. You want to make sure it's a DSM criteria. We don't just treat symptoms. Every effort should be maintained to continue that medication regime that promoted stability when reasonable. Just knowing that it's very difficult in psychiatry to get someone in remission in a major depressive episode. Most of the time, we just get some response to medication. So, if we actually have someone in remission, it took probably quite a bit of effort. So, I'd be hesitant to just change a medication that they were already in remission unless I had good cause. Abrupt cessation of medications at the onset of pregnancy and the history of postpartum mood episodes that you're going to increase their risk of prolonged illness. Although pregnancy typically has been considered a time of emotional well-being, up to 20% of women suffer mood and anxiety disorders, or does anxiety disorders during pregnancy. Particularly vulnerable are women with a history of psychiatric illness who discontinue psychotropic medications during pregnancy. One study found 82 women who maintain antidepressants throughout pregnancy, 26% relapsed, compared to 68% of women who discontinued their medication. Inadequately treated maternal psychiatric illness could result in poor prenatal care and nutritional defects, increased risk of alcohol, tobacco, and other substance use can impair the mother's ability to bond with the infant. Worst case scenario is suicide and infanticide, although that's rare. It can happen. Weigh the risk of untreated mental illness on the fetus and mother against the potential risk of medications. Untreated depression in pregnancy is correlated with increased risk of suicidation, miscarriage, and neonatal growth abnormalities. The theory is that depression stimulates the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis during pregnancy, resulting in increased cortisol levels. Chronic stress can impair that ability to regulate and synthesize inflammatory proteins. Increased inflammation and cortisol can lead to premature labor and contractions. Antenatal depression can have the consequences for the mother and fetus. Mother has increased risk of anemia, diabetes, hypertension, preeclampsia, and then postpartum depression. Untreated prenatal depression increases the risk of postpartum episode 50 to 62%. Suicide accounts for about 20% of postpartum deaths. Infants born to mothers with depression during pregnancy tend to be more irritable, less active. You're prone to developmental delays. It's really a risk discussion. Pregnancy is not a time that's protective against psychiatric illness. You can see new onset of psychiatric illnesses in the perinatal period and postpartum, as well as worsening premorbid psychiatric conditions. 0.0% of women aged 20 to 25 die by suicide, unfortunately, during pregnancy. Baseline risk. You want to be aware of your baseline risk of abnormalities when you're reading studies. So, baseline risk of congenital malformations of all pregnancies, 3 to 6%. With medication exposure, accounts for less than 1% of all birth defects. Maternal conditions such as poor nutrition, infection, 10%, genetics, 20%, 15 to 25% risk associated with psychiatric disorders post the fetus. Bipolar has been associated with microcephaly, hypoglycemia, low birth weight, preterm delivery, increased NICU admissions, major depressive episode, low birth weight, preterm delivery, decreased fetal growth, preeclampsia, and emotional problems. Schizophrenia, congenital malformations, stillbirth, small babies, preterm liver labor, placental abnormalities, postnatal death, and hemorrhage. So treatment with medications actually doesn't eliminate these risks or ameliorate the risk, but you explain the risks to the mother so they can decide what's best for her and what is best for the family. So during pregnancy, women with mild to moderate depression could benefit from psychotherapy on its own. So you don't always have to use medications. You can. But certainly cognitive behavioral therapy and interpersonal therapy have been proven treatments for mild to moderate depressive episodes during pregnancy. Over 30 years of data on antidepressants has overall shown a favorable risk-benefit profile. One in 12 women are going to take antidepressants during pregnancy. Although the research may be incomplete to quantify the risks psychotropics pose to the fetus because the studies are not RCTs, they're going to be cohort prospective or retrospective in design. Women with depression compared with women on antidepressants do not experience higher rates of miscarriage. So serotonin reuptake inhibitors, SSRIs, are not known to be major teratogens. There's some conflicting evidence with SSRIs and persistent pulmonary hypertension of the newborn, up to 1% risk. Other studies showed no association. Other studies showed a 0.3% risk with SSRIs versus 0.2% risk without SSRIs. So if there is a risk, it's rather minuscule. Other risk factors for PP, persistent pulmonary hypertension, include BMI, race of the mother, cesarean section. First trimester, fetal exposure to Paxil previously been associated with increased risk of atrial and ventricular septal defects. More recent studies have failed to demonstrate this risk. I would say we avoid this medication for other reasons, including the sedation risk, weight gain risk, sexual side effects. So it's really not my first, third, fourth. I rarely use Paxil. Tricyclic antidepressants do not increase risk of congenital malformation. Dasipramine and nortriptyline are preferred as less anticholinergic, less risk of orthostatic hypotension. In general, we don't often use TCAs. They're older. We use SNRIs usually more frequently. There's lethality risk with overdoses with TCAs. Serotonin norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, SNRIs, the data is reassuring as well that these medications are not associated with increased risk of malformations. So when mothers use SSRIs, SNRIs, or TCAs versus no medications, there's no differences in child's IQ, language, or temperament. Studies that control for confounding variables did not find an association in any impairment. However, there's few studies that systematically investigated the impact of exposure of psychotropics in utero to development of the baby. SSRIs do not cause autism, ADHD, anxiety in the child. If your child has autism or anxiety or those diagnoses, look at your family history or confounding variables. So here's just a little example of SSRIs, congenital abnormalities, septal heart defects. Baseline risk for general population is 1%. At worst, the data suggests that SSRIs expose babies to be 1.5%. And then major malformations of anencephaly, cranial ceratosis, omphalocele, it's very low. So anencephaly, baseline risk, 1 in 10,000, possibly 1 in 5,000 with SSRIs. Cranial ceratosis, 1 in 3,000, 1 in 1,000 with SSRI. Omphalocele, 1 in 4,000 versus 1 in 1,500. Pharmacokinetic profiles can change during pregnancy. Medications may have lower serum levels in the third trimester. There's changes in hepatic metabolism and renal clearance that can affect drug levels. Now, this doesn't mean that you automatically just increase medication based on there's pharmacokinetic changes. You would change doses of medications based on symptoms, whether there's increasing depression or anxiety. There's overexpression during pregnancy of the CYP-Y enzyme 3A4, 2A6, 2D6, and 2C9. SSRIs overall are considered your first-line choice for pregnant women suffering from depressive disorders, OCD, and anxiety. Sertraline and citalopram are recommended due to their safety profile. Sertraline, I would say, was one of my go-to. It's showed to have higher plasma drug concentrations but lower placental penetrance than other antidepressants. There was stability of the plasma concentration throughout pregnancy. I should clarify, it's my go-to if they've never been on a medication. If they've tried other meds that work better, I usually go to that. Go with what works. SNRIs, duloxetine and venlafaxine. So newer medications are going to obviously have less data. SNRIs, majority of the studies are for venlafaxine. Venlafaxine and duloxetine are not associated with teratogenic effects. There is still that risk of neonatal adaptation syndrome. Two studies reported slight increased risk of miscarriage with duloxetine. Other studies did not show this risk. Trazodone, no increased risk of malformations, miscarriage, or stillbirths with monotherapy, as well as polypharmacy with the citalopram, escitalopram, or sertraline. There's very limited information on reproductive safety of MAOIs. Those are not common drugs we use. We do use that sometimes, but not generally during pregnancy. There's a risk of hypertensive crisis. Mirtazapine. Tend to like this one during pregnancy because it can help with nausea. We can use it with hyperemesis gravida. Was not linked to congenital malformations, miscarriages, stillbirth, or neonatal death. Buprenorphine or Wellbutrin. Studies on the impact of cardiac abnormalities have been inconsistent. Congenital malformations with 3.6%, which is consistent with base risk. A systemic review and meta-analysis did not find buprenorphine was significantly associated with effects on the congenital malformations, birth weight, or gestational age. You may want to be careful with someone with a history of preeclampsia or eclampsia, as buprenorphine is associated with seizures. We don't ever use it with someone with a history of seizure disorder. Maybe a good drug to use for pregnant women who want to abstain from smoking. Escitalopram was associated with higher rates of low birth weight. It's unclear if it was the depression itself. Electroconvulsive therapy is an option for pregnant women with severe depressive episodes. This is usually started in the hospital. We do it outpatient, but most times the start begins in hospitalized patients. Transmagnetic stimulation appears safe during pregnancy, that is done outpatient. Anxiolytics during pregnancy, buspirone, it's new, so no good human data on this. Massachusetts General National Pregnancy Register is collecting data on the first trimester, 72 infants so far, no malformations observed. Hydroxyzine, again, no good human data, but thought to be okay, because Benadryl is safe. That reduces breast milk production. Gabapentin, limited human data, may be safe in the first trimester. One study where people who receive prescriptions of gabapentin early in pregnancy did not show increased risk of birth defects above the background risk. When they looked at data of people that used two prescriptions of gabapentin in the first trimester, there was an increased risk of heart defects, although it was unclear if there was other factors involved. One more thing on gabapentin, it might lower folic acid in people who take the medication. So professional organizations recommend that people on this type of medication take a higher dose of folic acid. Sleep in the postpartum period is important, but you want to talk with the mother. They may not want to be sedated. They may be the only caretaker for the baby. You want to ask questions such as, where is the baby sleeping? Who can care for the baby if you weren't able to wake up if you take medications? ACOG recommends Unisom and avoidance of melatonin, as it's not FDA regulated. Counter preparations may vary. Dosages may vary. Contaminants may be present there. Benzodiazepine, zolpidem, and gabapentin are usually used as a PRN basis. Anticholinergic medications, Benadryl, hydroxyzine, they can reduce breast milk supply, but overall reassuring data in pregnancy. The goal with medications is monotherapy. Polypharmacy is not studied, and it was related to adverse effects. Benzodiazepines combined with antidepressants was associated with increased risk of malformation or cardiac malformations of odd ratios of 1.4, overall low but significant risk. Benzodiazepines, historical data of first trimester exposure to benzodiazepines, there was a risk of oral clots of 0.6%. Current data since that time does not suggest an increased risk of congenital malformations during pregnancy for those taking benzodiazepines. Abrupt discontinuation of benzodiazepines is not recommended due to the risk of withdrawal. Gradually taper over 2 weeks. If the woman's pregnant, you want to use benzodiazepines no more than 3 times a week and at the lowest dose possible. Infants exposed to benzodiazepines in utero were more likely to be admitted to the NICU, small head sizes, adverse effects such as respiratory depression, muscular symptoms, hypotonia, no obstructive outcomes, differences were occurred. In general, with pregnancy with benzodiazepines or without, we try lowest dose, effective dose for the shortest possible time. Swedish register found 38% increased risk of an infant with neonatal outcomes such as low birth weight, preterm birth, respiratory distress, hypoglycemia, low Apgar score if the benzodiazepine was filled in the second or third trimester. Women who use benzodiazepines were more likely to use alcohol or illicit drug use in the first trimester compared to those not on benzodiazepines. They were less likely to take prenatal vitamins at conception. Anxiety in itself may impact sleep, appetite, increased substance abuse, and increased risk of postpartum depression. Benzodiazepines over the whole course of pregnancy were more likely to have low Apgar scores and extrapyramidal muscle symptoms, but not significant after controlling for confounding variables. Risk of spontaneous abortions. The study did not take into account of confounding variables. There was a 50% increased risk of those taking benzodiazepines versus those that did not, but the risk did not go over the baseline risk of miscarriage. We just need more research on this. This is overall very new information. Lactation safety or polypharmacy has not been systemically evaluated. First week of full-term infant's life, there's a lower capacity for hepatic drug metabolism. However, after 2 to 3 months, it surpasses that same capacity as adults. For premature infants with signs or compromised hepatic metabolism, breastfeeding may be deferred. TCAs and SSRI exposure through breast milk is low, and significant complications are rare. So, relative infant dose, according to American Pediatric Associate, under 10% is generally considered safe for breastfeeding. You're still going to monitor the infant for any changes in behavior, sedation, increased irritability. Citalopram, 59 infants. There was a few cases of irritability, one case of bruxism. Relative infant dose was 5.3% or less. In some other countries, they use a more stricter 5% or less rule for safety with breastfeeding. And most of our antidepressants are under that. Some go a little bit above. Escitalopram, 17 infants, relative infant dose was 8% or less. There was one case of necrotizing enterocolitis. Fluoxetine, 225 infants. Three cases of serotonin syndrome, one case of colic. This is one that can go over the 10%. It's up to 14.6%. Generally, fluoxetine has a long half-life, so you're going to want to monitor that baby a little bit more closely. Fluoxavine or Luvox, 13 infants, one case of diarrhea, vomiting, agitation. 1.4% relative infant dose or less. Paxil, that we don't like very much in pregnancy, actually has a quite low relative infant dose of 2.8% or less. One case of irritability, one case of constipation, one case of restlessness. Sertraline, 214 cases, one case of diarrhea, one case of restlessness in the baby. Pretty low relative infant dose of 2.2% or less. Brexlanolone, very new medication, not studied, but none reported adverse effects that we know of. Relative infant dose of 2% or less. Venlafaxine, 46 infants, one case of sedation and hypotonia. Relative infant dose of 8.1% or less. Duloxetine, 8 infants, no adverse effects. 1.1% or less relative infant dose. Fluoxetine, 3 infants, no adverse effects. 1.1 to 1.7% relative infant dose. Bupropion, one case of seizure and one case of abnormal movements. Relative infant dose of 2% or less. Mirtazapine, 62 infants, no adverse effects. relative infant dose of 6.3% or less, trazodone 1 infant, no adverse effects detectable in the infant plasma, relative infant dose of 2.8% or less. In 640 infants exposed to SSRIs during breastfeeding, there was only 18 adverse effects. TCAs, 1 infant sedation with amitriptyline, relative infant dose of amitriptyline, nortriptyline, chlorpromazine was 1.9 to 3.1%, undetectable in infant plasma level. Benzodiazepine exposure during breastfeeding is low. Adverse risk is low, but should be monitored for sedation in the infant. Alprazolam, 2 cases of sedation, 9.3% or less relative infant dose. Clonazepam, you just want to be aware this one has a longer half-life, so may want to try a shorter half-life, such as lorazepam. It's 4.6% relative infant dose, 1 case of apnea, 1 case of sedation. Lorazepam, 4.4% or less, no adverse effects. Zolpidem, minuscule amounts, no adverse effects. 130 infants out of 145 infants exposed to the benzodiazepines had no adverse effects. Most common reported was sedation, though. Okay, let's go back to our case study. So that 25-year-old female who's newly married, wants to get pregnant in the next year, feels stable on escitalopram, but is worried, doesn't want to do anything to harm the fetus, but doesn't want to be unstable, is fearful of postpartum depression as well, as there's a family history of postpartum depression. She's relatively stable, but she has some lingering symptoms of depression, not impairing her function. After discussing the risk of untreated depression on the mother and fetus versus the risk of antidepressants during pregnancy, including neonatal adaptation syndrome, pulmonary persistent hypertension, low birth weight, and preterm labor with the patient and spouse, they opt to continue the escitalopram during the preconception period. You actually increase the escitalopram, you're trying to treat to remission, so her mental health is more stable before she gets pregnant, and patient agrees to start cognitive behavioral therapy. So referral to care. So when to refer to psychiatry? I think that depends on the comfortability on the provider. So I think primary care has managed some very difficult cases because of maybe limited access to psychiatry. So maybe more comfortable some people than others. Someone with severe illness, suicide attempts, repeat suicide attempts, severe suicidation that's uncontrolled, bipolar, schizophrenia, psychosis, or failed multiple psychotropics should be referred to psychiatry. Referral to the emergency room, if a patient has a preference with that, if they feel like they're in crisis, so certainly they can come and we will take care of them. Active suicidations, psychosis, severe symptoms interfering with basic self-care, like that person's not able, they're not really eating, they're not drinking, they're just laying in bed all the day, they're not showering, going to work. Certainly appropriate for emergency room. Ambulatory consults for psychiatry. I just listed the consult number for you guys. Currently, St. Cloud is not taking new patients, but that can change with time. They are taking for patients for stabilization clinics. So psychiatric stabilization clinics means they'll see the patient for up to 3 months, try to stabilize them, and then get them back to your primary care. Or if they're on a long wait to Nystrom's or another psychiatric provider, they can stabilize them until they get continued care. E-consults, psychiatry consults. Again, I listed the number for you guys. The e-consults you can place at any time. They are going to base it, it's just a chart review. So hopefully the diagnosis is correct and you have information in there about past medication trials too. It's not for like emergency referrals. It's going to take 2 to 4 days for that information to be reviewed and them to get back for you. Wilmer Psychiatry Clinic actually does have new patient appointments available. It takes about 2 weeks to 1 month to get in. Here's some different clinical resources. Mothertobaby.org. I love the patient little simple pamphlets you can print out on different medications. Postpartum Support International has lots of information, patient-friendly support groups. Periscope Project is a project through Wisconsin. They do psychiatry consultation. If you live out in Wisconsin, they don't offer that for Minnesota. However, they do have a lot of like algorithms and good resources. Lactomed, I use it all the time for information on breastfeeding and medications. Here's some references. Thank you guys so much for your time. Hopefully it wasn't too boring. If you guys have any questions, you can send me an email. And then here's your CME slide. All right, take care.